New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get two snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Ahoy.
Ahoy there, Martin.
Oh, Craig, you gave me a little start.
Well, I'm not surprised. I just burrowed out of the earth, didn't I, in this...
You did, with a sort of drill bit. What was your drill bit? What was your mode of transport?
Well, I took inspiration slightly from the Boring Company, Elon Musk's new venture.
Has he genuinely got a boring company?
Genuinely has something called the Boring Company.
You hold a drill bit... And it goes and takes you down through the crust of the earth. Is that how it works?
Particularly useful if you're a pedo.
I was going to say, oh, you took the very gag straight from my teeth.
We're referring, of course, to Elon Musk's, that he called the cavers who called
more pedos. I suspect maybe he was. I think he was drunk. I hope he was drunk.
Maybe he was drunk. Yes. No. The Boring Company. I think it's something to do with he's creating this thing. It's called a Hyperloop. I think so.
I don't know any of these things.
Well, it's a transport. It's a means of transport. Yes. I think.
Yeah.
Where you do away with friction by floating the carriage on a sort of magnetic field, and the idea is it's like a sort of...
The Japanese do it with trains, don't they? Don't they have trains that sort of
exactly
float,
that kind of principle,
float
yes,
above so, the rail?
So this would be underneath the ground. I think he's proposing to link Los Angeles to San Francisco, but you could do all sorts.
And you could be there in about 20 minutes. That's the sort of thing, isn't it? You go at the speed
20
of...
20 minutes
wah!
Or so. Yes.
At the speed of... Wah!
Yes. What about you, Martin? How did you get here?
Well, I do you know what? The honest truth is, I just came on my skateboard.
Oh, nice.
You forgot that I skateboarded. I forgot yes. I skateboarded, to be honest, until I found the skateboard yesterday in the attic. And I thought, oh, I wonder if I've still got the... Oh, it's like riding a... Well, if I say it's like riding a bike, that won't be that surprising. But, you never lose it. You never lose it with the skateboard. I've been trying to see if I can do some...
Are you catching some air? Don't you catch air on a skateboard?
Yes, I was doing a bit of that. I jump and I spin the board and I then hit it. It is quite fun. It's quite scrappy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always imagined that if one got better at the boarding, maybe it would be slightly less noisy, become a bit more graceful. But it just looks terrible. It's just sort of... it's just... splang, clang, splat, clonk, clang, bleh, and you very nearly fall over and chin yourself. And that's exactly how it... That's it. It doesn't get any better. There's no elegant... There's nothing balletic about it. It's literally like... It's like someone just sort of, fighting with an invisible spade.
Yes, I agree. And they do that thing
that was. I made you wait so long for that. That was the worst payoff ever. I literally went for about 15 seconds, and the best I could come up with was fighting with an invisible spade. Doesn't do anything.
Are there any young skateboarders? Because skateboarding, I'm thinking the second wave of skateboarding was sort of in the 90s, wasn't it? The first one, like in the sort of late 70s, early 80s. Second wave.
Yes, you're right. Early 80s. Yes.
Second wave in the 90s. Do you remember there was a shop in Soho?
Yes.
I think it was called Slam City Skates, I think.
Yes,
it was the horrendously trendy skater's outfit company in Soho. And all those skaters, you know, the people who were, you know, getting on a bit in the 90s. I think the 90s was the first time you saw sort of full-grown men on scooters and skateboards. Is that fair?
Yeah, still wearing cargo pants. That was what they used to wear.
Cargo pants. It was always children before that. And suddenly, in the 90s, it was perfectly acceptable for a full-grown man to skateboard.
Full-grown man.
The streets of Notting Hill, particularly, I seem to remember.
Yes, that's right.
And those men who are, I think, I would guess, in their 30s or 40s
I should think so, yes. Now, must be in their pushing, well, their 60s, I should think now, aren't
probably
they?
In the end, you could just go straight from, you know, you get to a certain age, you can straight from riding a skateboard just to going on one of those hospital trolleys, and then you can go in and have your...
Oh, that's a very good idea. Probably quite a lot of the same...
same mechanics, isn't it, really?
Same mechanics, be fun, that, yes. Anyway, so I came on the skateboard. There it is. It looks a handsome thing these days, doesn't it? My goodness me.
It really does. It's quite a size, too.
Yes, and it is, yes. You could easily use it as a gurney. If you had to, I think, couldn't you?
Yes, it could be a mobility device as you get older.
You could actually, with a skateboard and a Zimmer frame, you could... a Zimmer board.
Zimmer board.
I like that very much. Very much indeed. With my cargo pants.
Martin, is this a zeitgeist question? We're touching upon ageing. I think it's an intriguing question. It's just, when I was a child, old people seemed to be old, roughly around sort of 50 years of age. People were very old. Really old at 60 and probably in a home.
Yes, that's right. Yes, 50, they were really quite old, weren't they?
Quite old. And 60, definitely in a home where you'd be eating, you didn't want to call it carpet, but that was what it looked like, sort of faded blue.
Eating carpet? This is not the same as munching rug, is it? That's a different thing,
isn't it? Did I say eating carpet?
Yes.
Did I say eating carpet? I was thinking of an old people's home where you have those chairs with the sort of wooden...
I know, wooden
sort of 70s
arms,
chairs,
exactly,
wooden
arms. The wipe down.
You know, you have a carpet that's not made of any natural fibre.
Oh, Lord, no.
And you have paintings on the walls that look like it'd be done with an airbrush.
Yes,
In a little sort of a teak frame. That's what I'm picturing. That was an old people's home. What is going to happen in the future when people of our age say, are we going to go into old people's homes? If we
what
are they going to look like? How does it work?
Will we all suddenly want to watch The Racing and Pointless? I don't know.
How does that work? So we've got our skateboards. Obviously, there'll be a skateboard rack outside the home.
Yes.
You know, there'll be a place that, you know, in case we want to go and catch some air.
It's a very interesting point, that, because what I find is quite extraordinary is actually 50 is now very young. It's a very young age, 50. 50, very, very young. You know, I should imagine Philip Schofield's probably 55, I should think. He's a very young fellow, isn't he?
Very young.
Red-blooded fellow like yourself, of course. And you're then... You know, you see people who are very, very young. They're still very youthful. They're in good shape.
Yes.
People keeping themselves. They're eating well. They're still very mobile. They're participating in all kinds of sports and activities. And then 60 comes. Absolutely still young. Still going. 60. Mm-hmm. 65. Still going. Looking a bit older. I'll be perfectly honest. Of course.
Madonna's 65. I bet you Madonna's 65.
Yes. There you are. You see.
She is.
And moving along. Then suddenly, somewhere between the ages of 70 and 80, it all...
goes off a cliff.
Catches up. And people end up pretty much where they would have been in old age many, many generations ago. And this is always the shocking thing I always find. It's when you see politicians whose faces one saw for almost on a daily basis. And then they disappear. Maybe they go to the House of Lords, or maybe they become sort of, they're on the sort of literary circuit, and they then disappear. And then suddenly they appear about 4 or 5 years later, and you think, bloody hell. Mm. Oh, my goodness. Or they've just been dusted by age, and suddenly it comes as a shock. You know, you suddenly see someone like Norman Lamont, and you go, ah, good heavens above, God.
Norman Lamont seemed to be 70 years old, I'm sure, when I was at school. Here's a peculiar thing, speaking of school. Have you ever noticed, when you go back to school, as I do occasionally, I occasionally get invited back to Chingford High Speech Day.
Yes.
And when I go... the teachers, some of whom were there when I was a student, they don't seem to change at all.
Oh, no.
How is that possible? How is it possible that someone who taught me when I was in short trousers can now look pretty much the same? I don't get it.
Eurovision, oh, red-blooded yes. fellow like yourself, Craig, I know would have been absolutely glued to Eurovision. It's a staple, isn't it?
It's a staple. It's a sight for sore eyes, Martin. A sight for sore eyes. It's extraordinary, Eurovision, isn't it? I think it's... I remember the days when it was really quite a sort of lo-fi affair, Eurovision. It was a sort of... It was a cousin of Top of the Pops, but a very neglected cousin. Perhaps a cousin sort of... I don't want to sound prejudiced, but a cousin perhaps eking out a resistance in some forgotten corner of Romania.
Some low country of Europe.
Yes, yeah, or a low country of Europe.
One of the low countries of Europe. A cousin that we haven't really seen, then ran off with someone from a low country of Europe and has sort of lived there on a diet of cabbage ever since.
But when did it turn into this extravaganza, this global powerhouse?
They've made it sort of party central. It's a sort of... It's just a joyous outpouring of high camp, I think, isn't it? And people love it for that reason. And I think that's... They've been very canny and they've marketed it that way, and I suspect it's become... quite a cash cow on the back of it, whereas we're thinking back to the days when it really was very, very sort of faded brown in colour, wasn't it?
It was really all quite corduroy and
you know,
and worthy. And now it seems to be
it's an exciting programme, and what used to be the sort of slightly maudlin mutterings of Terry Wogan, who, you know, clearly was missing the fact that he'd had to turn down some fabulous golf at Wentworth that day, and you know, instead had to be sort of holed up in Riga. But he's discovered the minibar, which, you know, so every cloud, and you know, that was always a rather lovely thing to discover once you realised that Terry really was having a lovely time, was actually being a little bit wry,
a little bit cheeky about it, wasn't he?
But that has now become carved in stone that's now part of the Eurovision thing. So, you know, Graham Norton has been wheeled in to be precisely what Terry sort of accidentally was, if you know what I mean. Not that that's a bad thing. I think Graham does a lovely job of it. He's very likable, isn't he? Yeah.
Yes, but I suppose I feel that's what you've put your finger exactly on what bothers me about it now. Is it used to be something that took itself terribly seriously, which we all could have a bit of a giggle about.
Yes.
And now it's so knowing and so unashamedly ironic about itself.
Yes.
It seems to me that it's lost a little of its charm. But of course, what it's lost in charm, it's gained in all... It's gained in monetary terms, isn't it? So obviously raking it in. Can we talk a little bit about what... about what we saw in you did watch it, right? Eurovision?
Oh, I thought it was... No, I didn't watch it, no. Okay. But I thought it was wonderful.
I didn't watch it either, but you can't help picking up one or two little tidbits.
I watched James Newman.
Yes.
I did watch...
You watched him?
Yes.
That didn't go terribly well. I wasn't impressed. Here's the thing about Eurovision. The acts are also... It's also high concept now. They use that huge video screen, don't they? They have all this... It's a spectacular... His was a little bit... It was just those two trumpets, wasn't it? That was it.
Yes. It felt like something from The Dome. Do you remember?
The Millennium Dome.
From the Millennium Dome. It felt like one of the areas or whatever it was called. Someone's trumpet area.
Yeah.
Welcome to James's trumpet area. And he was very much standing at the bell end, wasn't he, of both of those trumpets?
He is very much at the bell end, I felt. He was channeling sort of Lewis Capaldi to start with. That's what I was expecting.
Yes.
I was expecting a sort of a soul merchant. But what I got was just a merchant, really, I felt.
Yes.
And of course, we're forgetting the truly baffling bit, which was the weird videos they played before all the acts.
That's
so before,
right, curious little neon.
What was that? So
it was
like
an advert for a building society.
It was so strange. It was a sort of the frame of a building.
Yes.
And why are we here? Why are we in this building? Suddenly, a pair of boots appear, as far as I can remember.
Indeed.
And then a frying pan on a camping stove. In go a couple of fried eggs. And there's James shaking his fried eggs, thumbs up to the camera. That was it. I felt like I was on drugs.
Like something from Catchphrase. You're waiting for something. Oh, is it? Is it a bird in the hands worth
stitch
two
in
the
time.
Bush?
Stitch in time.
It was bad and it was not right. To paraphrase
where
Roy
was
Walker.
It? Where
well,
was it?
I don't know.
It wasn't in England, was it? No, I don't know. It was presumably...
It must have been in some...
Where was it set this year? Rotterdam, was it?
Rotterdam. I think it was Rotterdam, actually. You're
absolutely yes, the show
right.
was from Rotterdam.
Oh, I see.
But where was the island? Where was that little island that he was on, that atoll?
Oh, I see what you mean. I don't...
Where
atoll.
Is that?
Oh,
what
I don't
is that?
Know. I don't know. Maybe it was just a...
Thoroughly
maybe
baffling.
It was CGI. I don't know. Anyway, there he was at the
Bell Ends. Truly alarming. It was an alarming thing to watch. At the Bell End.
Jumping around. And then Main Skin, were they called? Main Skin, which would be quite good.
Yes.
And Lion with a mane and a skin, of course.
The Italian job.
Mona Skin.
Mona Skin.
I think is what they're saying.
And
they were energetic, quite grungy, I thought, which was interesting that's what Europe as a whole went for, because... It was quite thrashy, and I mean, I've only seen it the once, so I can't speak with any great authority on it. But I was interested to notice that I hear that song, even before the contest, even before they won, it was at number two in the Italian chart. I dare say it is now at the top of their hit parade. But it's very interesting. I would imagine James Newman is not troubling the chart keepers.
He's not going to bother the chart keepers, is he?
No, I wouldn't have thought.
I was
so.
From Maneskin. Meneskin, I don't know. I was getting sort of budget Trent Reznor. Is that fair?
Yes. I think that is a fair.
And of course, we have to mention there was a bit of controversy.
Meneskin, I think, were... I don't know if this is true, but the rumour is that they were caught, even on camera, taking... what one has to imagine is cocaine.
Snorting drugs.
They were snorting white drugs. White
on the
drums.
Glass tables of Rotterdam.
Of Rotterdam.
As if they were in some downmarket brown cafe.
Oh, Roy, I'm going to say, is it White Lines? Is it White Lines, Roy? No. It's good. It's not right.
It's good, but it's not right.
It's good. It's not right.
What do we think about that? I mean, personally, because of course they were subsequently vindicated, which I think is an enormous shame.
How were they
it?
Vindicated? Why?
Well, they had a drugs test. They were given a drugs test. They were made to give a drugs test.
I tell you what, there's all kinds of drugs from Rotterdam that I've taken, but you could test me with a drugs test afterwards, and I similarly would come up clean as a whistle.
What makes me laugh about that is then either they've got a really terrible dealer,
or it was done deliberately.
Or it was for show. It was for show and it wasn't real drugs.
I believe that when they won, the rousing cry that came rasping from the throat of the singer of Meneskin, whose name has not necessarily escaped, I'm not sure it was ever imprisoned.
Damiano David.
Damiano David. When they won, he yelled, "Rock and roll will never die."
Oh yeah, when they went to make their speech, ironically killing rock and roll stone dead at that moment. I think if we ever could put a time of death on rock and roll, it was that moment, wasn't it? It was the moment when a man in eyeliner in broken English stands up, punches the air. Having just won Eurovision with his rock and roll act. And
quite a lot of siff dribbling out of his nose.
Screams, "Rock and roll will never die." That's it. That's it. It's over.
That's it.
That's the point at which rock and roll goes, bee!
Yes. The song, by the way, the song was Zitti e Buoni.
Okay.
Zitti e Buoni.
Yeah. I'm none the wiser for that.
Yes. I think it means shut up and be quiet. I mean, if it was something like shut up and shout, that would be clever because, you know, the one hand is saying shut up and the other is saying shout. And this one is just saying shut up and be quiet. I think that's...
It's probably shut up in your face.
I think it is essentially...
In Italian, isn't it?
It is essentially shut up in your face. What's the matter now? Why are you taking these drugs?
What's the matter, you? Why are you taking the drugs?
Why are you taking these drugs? This.
It's not a good gear. Oh, shut up in your face.
Oh, shut up in your face. Actually, it's not so bad. Did you happen to see, Craig? This is an interesting story. Banksy. You know, the street artist and totally anonymous artist. I don't need to tell you who Banksy is, of course. You ruddy love the man.
I do.
You probably know him. He's probably a friend of yours. You've probably shared white ladies with him in late night cocktail bars.
Oh, he's a red-blooded man just like me, yes.
He's a red-blooded one. Oh, don't give anything away.
I only
know him as a silhouette.
Yes, well, this is the thing.
A Bristol silhouette.
So I think he took a greetings card company to court, right?
That's
because
right,
they
yes.
reproduced some of his images on their greetings cards.
That's right.
And the European courts have ruled that his copyright has not been infringed, and this is my lay understanding of it, because in the first place, it's public art, therefore uncopyrightable, and in the second place, because he himself is anonymous.
He himself is anonymous, and he has actually gloried in the public nature of the art. However, it all gets a little bit difficult. I mean, I think Banksy's been very happy to keep these things slightly murky. Just that, you know, the boundaries are a little bit blurred, shall we say, because obviously, you know, he does this public art, and yet you can buy great chunks of wall, a bit like the old Berlin Wall, where it's all been sort of where someone's just literally drilled it off the wall and sort of hung it in chunks on the wall of a gallery. And, you know, you can pay millions and millions and millions of pounds to buy these original works of Banksy's, which I presume the money in some way devolves after it's been pilfered by all the many agents in the way. I imagine some of that money finds its way into Banksy's account.
Well, I don't know if it does. I reckon this is an interest. I mean, this is very interesting for a couple of reasons. First of all, I don't think the court is right, and maybe we should get onto that in a minute. But the second part is Banksy is obviously hopping mad about the whole thing. He's created this fantastic, this empire, this brand, and his mate Damien Hirst is absolutely raking it in, hand over fist.
Yes,
literally
yes.
holds his own auctions now of his own art.
So does Banksy, by the way.
Ah, okay.
So does Banksy is absolutely coining it. I mean, if you can find a sort of, I say, an A-list Hollywood star. Of course, they don't really exist anymore these days. They're
It's just George Clooney, isn't it?
George Clooney being the sort of the last, and Brad Pitt, I suppose, being, you know. But those old-style Hollywood A-listers, you can find one that doesn't have three or four Banksy's on the walls of their Montecito mansions, then you're a better man than I am. That's all I was going to say.
That's interesting to hear. Because it always seems to me that he would struggle, Banksy, to monetize it to quite the extent he would probably wish. And I think we've got a little insight into that with this legal case. Because at the end of the day, how much money is a greetings card company making out of selling Banksy greetings cards? I can't imagine.
I wouldn't have thought a great deal. I have met Banksy's agent. I have met the person who runs his gallerist. Very, very nice fellow who runs a gallery in just south of Soho Square. It's a very exciting, as you can imagine, very, very exciting indeed. You know, it's a fun place to go to. I go there, and who has a man of the people, as you know. But even I find myself dropping my H's and, you know, glottal stopping some of my T's and things just so I don't, you know. I mean, it's ridiculous, really, because I speak very much like everybody else. But So I'm in absolutely no doubt as to how much a coin.
Well, probably we shouldn't worry. Probably we shouldn't worry.
No, I think we probably shouldn't.
He's probably fine. He's probably going to be okay.
He'll be all right.
But
he'll be all
but
right.
But for me, it doesn't quite add up. I don't quite follow the arguments. I don't see why, if someone is anonymous, they can't have copyright. You know, J.D. Salinger, for example, with Catcher in the Rye.
Yes, yes.
Prized his anonymity, but I'm sure the royalties for Catcher in the Rye were distributed to him.
Well, he does have a company that does own the intellectual property, I believe. Pest Control, that's what they're called.
Right, yes, Pest Control. Well, they're the people who brought the action, aren't they? Pest Control.
But equally, he has said, he said something along the lines of copyright is for losers, because he felt that his brand was bigger than that. I suppose it's a little bit like Coldplay or Radiohead making albums that they then sell for free. They sell for free because they don't like the constraints and the exploitation, the mercantilism of the music industry. And so they put these things out for free. It's
well,
not
I
to
suppose,
say that...
I suppose I would argue that something is either copyright or it isn't. And someone's opinion as to whether it's copyright or not is neither here nor there. And in this case, the fact that it happens to be Banksy's opinion is neither here nor there. Either his works are copyrightable or they aren't. And if they are copyrightable, it doesn't matter what Banksy thinks about it.
I don't think they are. Because like, he's made it his thing that he think what's important for Banksy is Banksy. These things are just ephemera. Quite often the things that he puts out on walls will be painted over by zealous councils or be chipped out or other rival... Who on earth they are, I don't know, but other rival graffitists who think that they hold a flame to Banksy, they'll come and paint them over and paint other things of theirs. You know, the idea is that it's not the individual pictures, it's Banksy. All these things just add to the power and the influence and ultimately the value of Banksy himself. You know, this wonder, it's a brilliant piece of performance art, really, apart from anything else. These are mere props. These pieces of art. And I don't think he minds at all. He's very keen that people should copy his things, that people should photograph them. I think what sticks in his craw is that it's a greetings card company who've done absolutely nothing at all apart from just photograph his work, and they're sort of peddling it. I don't know. I mean, no one really wins in this because it's a very difficult point for him to make, I suppose. If I were the greetings card people, I would just make a very sizable donation, very publicly, to an arts charity, maybe one based in Bristol.
While I've got you, Martin, I just want to ask you about one more blip on my cultural dial, which is, have you noticed these two stories? There's a story about Kevin Spacey.
Yes.
So Kevin Spacey, of course, cancelled, I think, last year.
Oh, many years ago, actually. I think a good 3 years ago.
3 years ago. Anyway, cancelled because of complaints of sexual harassment.
Yes.
Some of which I think were to do with when he was in charge of the Old Vic. Anyway, Kevin Spacey has just been cast in the lead, I believe, an Italian film or TV series. I'm not sure. It's a sort of a detective series, right?
Hmm.
And we've also got Aziz Ansari, who was cancelled. This is, I think, again, back a couple of years now.
Yes, yes.
He, if memory serves, there was a sort of blog site, I think called babe.net or something like that, and an ex-acquaintance of his posted a quite detailed description of a terrible night that she'd spent with Aziz Ansari, which was really not really accusing him of anything more than being a bit of an arse, but that was was basically the accusation.
Yes, yes.
And you know,
but
sort
did
of,
that open floodgates?
It did open floodgates, and he was then cancelled.
Oh.
So his show, Master of None, has now come back for a third series, but he's writing it, but he's not really in it anymore. He's kind of one of the subsidiary characters, actually played brilliantly by Naomi Aki, and she's now his co-writer in the show. Her character is now the main character in the show, and his character, Dev, only sort of appears now and then, just pops up now and then. He's not really the main character
anymore.
I see,
yes, yes.
It's quite a sort of...
It's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean,
so people now creep, sort of creeping back from the dead, is what I'm saying. People coming back from the dead.
I find myself conflicted on this one, if I'm perfectly honest, because on the one hand, nothing, it must be stressed, Kevin Spacey has not been charged with anything. He's not been found guilty of anything.
No.
However, the rumours are credible. You know, there's a volume of quite credible rumour surrounding Spacey. And I think a number of people felt that was, there was enough about those rumours. They felt well enough founded for concern, shall we say, for things to be problematic.
Well, do you remember he was cancelled from that film he was in, All the Money in the World? And
oh, that's right. Christopher Plummer stood in for
Christopher Plummer took his place, won an Oscar. Yes, I mean, it was quite a big deal at the time. So I just think it's interesting. His two approaches, right? Kevin Spacey, accused of sexual misconduct. As you say, nothing ever came to court. Aziz Ansari, I mean, I don't want to put him in the same category, but he was. What is similar about the two of them is they were cancelled.
That's right.
Yes. So Aziz Ansari, quite ingeniously, really decides to take himself out of the equation and sort of sidestep the whole issue and make it about, you know, what really was before a kind of, not ladsy exactly, but a sort of a show from that was written very much from the male gaze into a show about a lesbian relationship.
That's right, yes, yes.
And use his platform to shine the light on his fellow performers. Kevin Spacey is playing a pervert detective. he's really gone for it, right?
Well,
he's a sex crime detective. That's it. He's just
a sex crime
balls
detective.
Out.
That's right,
I'm going to be a sex crime detective because I was accused of sex crimes, so now I'm going to be a character who does sex crimes.
I see.
I think Kevin's approach is more honest. I suppose that's what I'm trying to get to.
Yes.
I feel like, am I wrong in saying Aziz Ansari, and it is a brilliant, brilliant show, but I detect something slightly cunning within that pivot.
Yes.
Whereas Kevin Spacey... It's just going,
we need to talk about this. You know,
we need to talk about this.
He's standing fully naked above the parapet. Sorry. Not naked. But you know what I mean? He's not wearing any defences, as it were.
Exactly. I mean, maybe we're sort of, maybe we are comparing sort of apples and oranges here. Am I the only one who gets a terrible sweat when you even talk about anything to do with people getting cancelled, in utter fear that I'm going to get cancelled myself, just put a foot ever so slightly wrong, just edge it over the line and say something irretrievable. But anyway, I'm going to go for it. Yes, we have on one side, we have Aziz Ansari, arguably a lesser offence, but he has apologised. He's found his way back. He's taken a back seat in Master of None. And on the other side, we've got Kevin Spacey is just basically going, pardon the expression, I probably will get cancelled for this, balls out. Yes, I'm the sex crime guy. I'll be the sex crime detective. I'm going to go to Italy, make a big sex crime detective film, basically wearing the baseball cap proudly there. Which one is going to work? I don't know. I have a hunch, but for fear of being cancelled, I'm not going to say which.
Well, I think it's probably time for you to bore off somewhere else. That sounds very disparaging, doesn't it? I didn't.
Yes, I see the mistake I've made there. Yes. with my mode of transport.
Oh, yes. Well, I meanwhile will just skate like us.
And you're going to board off as well, Martin.
I'm going to bore. Oh, that's nice. Bore and board. Well, it's been very nice to chew the cultural cud, shoot the cultural. Actually, they're not just a breeze this week. It's been like a sort of like a gale, hasn't it?
It's been a rippling gale. Hasn't it?
Oh, it has. Yes, yes. Several trampolines flying along in it.
Yes, I think I might put the wind machine on just in honour of the Eurovision Song Contest. Just go off with my. There we go.
Whoa.
Dehoy, Martin.
Dehoy, Craig. Dehoy.
Dehoy.
You've been listening to Time Ghost. Time Ghost was created by Alexander Armstrong and Ben Miller. It was produced by Andy Goddard and Diggory Waite, and the exec producer was Claire Broughton. Time Ghost is a Hattrick podcast. You can now follow Time Ghost on Instagram. Just search @TimeGhostPod.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.